Bobbig.
Welcome back to room B, I guess. So the room where the lessons of 14 years of open source Haskell are now presented by Albert Krewinkel. Yeah, let's not waste any more time. Albert, stage is yours.
Thanks.
One round of applause.
I'm here to talk about what I've experienced in the last 7 years, actually, in which I've been programming in an open source project. And as the old saying goes, like, how do you know somebody is using Haskell? They'll tell you. That's exactly what I'm going to do today. I want to talk about how we're using it, and I also thought, like, there's a lot being said about functional programming and why it's good, maybe why it's bad, but there's a little data around that, so I wanted also to change that at least a little bit and to provide you with some hard or semi-hard data. First of all, who am I that I'm talking about all of this? As you saw, Albert, I've been contributing to Pandoc, the document converter, for 7 years now, so not the like half of the 14 years that the project actually exists. I'm very much a Haskell enthusiast. I really like the language, even though for work I'm employed by a company called Check, and I write a computer algebra system in Swift, which is kind of an acceptable Haskell. We're also hiring if you happen to be in Israel, so if you like to work on that, please do ask me about it. So what is Pandoc exactly? It's a document converter, and it was written by John McFarlane, who is not a computer scientist, but a professor of philosophy in Berkeley. It's still used by many people around the world, especially academics, and many people contribute to it nowadays. And the main thing it does is it converts markup from one kind into the other. So what you see here is on the left side how you could write it in, say, something like Markdown, and what Pandoc does, it takes that input, that pure plain text, and transfers it into something which looks nice and pleasant, and it doesn't only work on normal like highlighting, so having convert something from these asterisks into bold, but it also works on LaTeX, and this isn't actually rendered LaTeX on the right side, but this is MathML, so even this is converted through Pandoc, which I personally find incredibly amazing, and I had nothing to do with it. Pandoc is it's not only about Markdown, although this is probably the best known feature it has, but it converts to many other document formats. So any of those documents that you see on those slides, you can pick any two and convert from one into the other and back again. It's obviously not perfect because there will be a loss of information, documents are different, but it works. And how does it work? Because you can't write converters from n documents to m, like you would have to write n times m converters, that isn't a good idea. So it actually reads the documents into a central document AST, abstract syntax tree, and uses that to then render that representation out in various document formats. This is a tiny example of documents like the AST that Pandoc is using. So this is for inline elements, so something that's within a sentence or within a paragraph. It can be something like just a plain word, a text, it can be a space, line break, emphasized text, code, mouth, like you name it. The actual definition for just inlines is about double that, and there's also more definitions for blocks and they have and metadata and everything, so there's a lot to it, but it really boils down to a very central definition. And I'd ask you to keep this in mind because this is going to be important in a couple of places. And as you can see, this is obviously Haskell. If you have ever seen Haskell before, it's a Haskell data structure. And you might be wondering, like, why was Pembroke written in Haskell? And the answer is very similar if you ask a couple of people who wrote successful Haskell programs. It's usually, well, I like that language, I really wanted to use it in some kind of way. And that's how it ended up being written in Haskell. This, in the case of John McFarlane, he wanted to use the PASIC library. So yeah, it's kind of a coincidence, but how does this affect the program or the project as a whole? And for this, I really want to take a look at the contributions and how people contribute to the project. Because Haskell isn't known to be very accessible, and you can see this in quotes like these, which is an actual quote from our Pandoc Discuss mailing list, where somebody said, well, I don't know enough Haskell to create a pull request. Like, they want to contribute, but Haskell is keeping them from doing that, which is bad. We'd like everybody to contribute. And I wondered, like, how common is this? And can we put some data on this? So I looked for similar projects, which I could use to compare Pandoc with, and I ended up with these three projects in the end. Sphinx is another documentation system, really. It's, all of these are incredibly good. I really recommend any one of these. One is written in Python, AsciiDoc or AsciiDoctor. Nowadays it's written in Ruby, previous implementation was Python. They all have kind of a similar age, and the lines of code are also in the same order of magnitude. So I think those are good projects to compare. And I said, okay, if Haskell really puts people off, then we should be able to see that, and we should be able to, like, if we look at how many people contribute just a few commits, then this should be like a lot rarer with Haskell. So I got that data, plotted out, and as you can see, it's not really the case. Like, there are differences between the projects, but Pandoc's actually, like, kind of in the middle between AsciiDoctor and Sphinx. So the number or the percentage of contributors who contributed one commit actually kind of looks the same. And this gets even more obvious if you look at the cumulative distribution, where we just look at, okay, how many people contributed, say, 9 commits or less. And as you can see, it all, like, goes up to around 90%. So consistently for all three projects, 90% of people don't contribute more than a single-digit number of commits, which I find interesting. Like, okay, apparently there isn't much of a difference here, which should be good news to everybody who's using Haskell. But still, like, those are all relative numbers. Let's check the absolute numbers of contributors. And now we're talking, now we see, okay, there is, like, a serious difference. There's 50% more contributors to the Sphinx Python project than there are to Pandoc. Like, I only checked the main repositories for this, which has the unfortunate effect that ASCII Doctor is actually underrepresented here, because ASCII Doctor is spread across many, many different repositories, and I chose to just analyze the one central repository. So these this data is unfair for ASCII Doc or ASCII Doctor. But it's very representative, I think, for Sphinx and Pandoc, and yeah, it does have an effect. But if you look at this and then think about how many people actually know Haskell and how many know Python, and I plotted this here, this data is taken from Stack Overflow, a survey from 2017, and this shouldn't be surprising. There's a lot of people who know Python. There are quite a few people who know Ruby, but only 1.8% of all participants in that survey said they know Haskell. So if you compare that to the previous slide, where we look at total contributors, you see, okay, this is actually pretty good. People who know Haskell apparently like to contribute code and to write code, so this is already interesting. And we can dig even deeper and look how involved are people if they choose to contribute. And for this, we checked how many lines of code people add in total. All three languages, Ruby, Python, and Haskell, are very expressive. I'd even argue Haskell is more expressive than the other ones. And as you can see, people who contribute to Pandoc contribute more. So everybody who's, maybe that's hyperbole, but people who write Haskell seem to like writing code more, which I think should employers take note. If you want good guys, maybe write your projects using Haskell. And okay, so I was talking about contributions a lot, and there isn't only code contributions, there's also on the community handling and documentation and everything. And I unfortunately don't have any data on this, also because it doesn't really matter in the context of Haskell. But I still want to mention it because this is often forgotten. And at least for Pandoc, we're incredibly lucky to have a huge and great community, which is very helpful to newcomers and really, yeah, makes the project better as a whole. So, I promise you to talk a bit about the actual effects and what we saw in while programming Haskell and the code drawbacks. And also, I'd like to talk how you can mitigate those drawbacks, because I think nobody would argue that there aren't any drawbacks to programming Haskell. First of them is, as you saw before, people don't necessarily know Haskell or want to write Haskell. So a good way to still include those people is to accommodate them and to say, fine, don't write Haskell, here's a different way of doing things. And John McFarlane had this incredibly good idea of using the central AST document structure and to allow people to modify it. And there are multiple ways to do so. One of them on the left is to use Lua, which is small embeddable programming language, so you can use that to just write small scripts, modify the document structure, and then output the result. Or you could do the same using basically any programming language, as long as it can parse JSON. So Pandoc has the ability to output the AST as a JSON object, and in this case, what you see here is how just the string hello world would look in the JSON output. And this can be consumed in any library that supports it. There are libraries for Python, for PHP, for JavaScript, you name it. So this made it possible to include people even though they do not know Haskell. Now the drawback are libraries. At least back in 2006, when the program started, there were a lot of libraries missing. And what happened was that John McFarlane had to write a lot of the libraries himself. For example, many document formats are actually kinds of zip containers, and so he had to write a library which takes zip archives and can decompress those. This didn't exist. That's still like sometimes the case that you'll have to write your own libraries if you're using Haskell. I think it's gotten much better, but I'll come back to that in a second. Also, the whole tool chain of Haskell is kind of non-standard. If you go and tell somebody, well, just install that Python package, it will probably be easy for most people. They'll just hit install or whatever, and they know exactly what to do. If you tell them, well, install that Haskell program, not many people will know what to do. So to accommodate people there is more difficult. One way is to just say, hey, install GHC, you'll be fine. John McFarlane actually said, like, okay, maybe Pandoc is this virus which spreads the GHC compiler, like the Haskell compiler, into people's computers. And I think he's quite right with that. But that alone can't be the solution, so there are other things like pack it up nicely, make it easy for people to use it, provide Linux binaries and Windows binaries, and we also have Docker builds, obviously. All that stuff to make it just really easy and to make people forget this is actually written in Haskell. And it works quite well because people are often surprised that Pandoc is written in Haskell. So I think, it's a job good done, well done. So with all those drawbacks, and you have to work around that, like, why would you be using Haskell? And my first answer to that is surprisingly libraries. Like, you'll probably say, hey, I saw that slide before and said something completely different. Well, sure, but I think the situation has improved a lot, and also the libraries that do exist are very amazing and high quality. So, prime example, Parsec, the parser library, is an amazing piece of work. But there are also, like for the web, Haskell is great. One of the highest star projects on GitHub is Postgres, which is an interface, like a REST interface to a PostgreSQL database. And that has little to do with parsing, but a lot to do with databases and JSON and whatsoever. And it works great, it's really popular. And I talked to Joe Nelson about it, and he said, yeah, well, it's amazing what we did with like the few lines of code that we actually had to write. It's more than a few lines, but it's, I think you get the point. It's quite amazing what you can do with the libraries that do exist. And that is a prime, common claim about functional programming, that purity helps in some kind of way. And again, I'm quoting John McFarlane here. He said that purity helps to preserve sanity. And I think he's right for that. What happens is, if you have little time and have to maintain a popular open source project, you can't always dive deep into the code and check every single line of code that you, the same way you would in a commercial setting. But sometimes you just have to, okay, it looks fine, and with good typing, this is very easy, because you look at the types, you see, okay, this is what it's gonna do, it won't do any like I/O, it won't access the database, won't modify the global state, and you'll be sure, I don't have to understand it in detail, looks about right, the result looks good, fine, nothing will break on the other side of your application. That's why I think it really preserves sanity. But quite relatedly, Haskell is also really nice if you look at testing. Writing unit tests is a lot simpler if you have pure functions. But it's also really well known for having property checks, like quick check the library and lean check and all those different property checking libraries. They make the whole experience a lot nicer. And like the author of ShadCheck, Vida Holm, basically said, yeah, it's so nice that you really want to write tests. And he's not like a testing enthusiast, but still, his code base is very well tested simply because it's so easy. And also, mocking is surprisingly easy. There are different ways of doing it, and there's a lot of discussion in the Haskell community, what's the right way to handle side effects. But all of them make it rather easy to just write a pure implementation of whatever you want to do and to mock your effects out and to use that to test your effectful code. Pandoc does the same. I'm using that as an example. There's a central Pandoc monad, which contains, which is a type class, contains all the effects that Pandoc has to handle, and this type class can be implemented in I/O, or with the help of I/O, or just with pure functions, and you can use the pure stuff to test it quite nicely. But I think what's really great about Haskell, what totally takes the cake, is refactoring. Because the typing and the type system helps a lot with finding what you need to change, and the compiler will tell you exactly, oh, you forgot to change that. And so you don't have to rely only on tests, even though tests are still a very good idea, but the compiler will really, really help you. And I want to nail that point down by looking at an example, again, taking from Pandoc, obviously, which has to do with the central data structure. And in 2006, when Pandoc was created, there was only a single string type in Haskell, which is called string. And people who program in Haskell will know this string type is very like memory hungry, because it's just a linked list of characters. And in a normal program, you'd use text, like a different string type called text. Because the central structure is so very central, this affects a lot of the program. Basically, the whole program has to be changed if you change something in that structure. And it's very tedious, and nobody wanted to do it for a really long time, until like at the end of last year, a guy called Christian Despries came in and just did it. And he hadn't contributed to any open source Haskell project before, not to Pandoc. Like, he didn't really know the code base. He just said, okay, I'm going to do it. And he dived in and did it. And that, I find that mind-blowing, that somebody is able to, without knowing the code base in a very precise way, what's happening there, to just dive in and whip out one thing, put in another, fix all the stuff that comes up, and be done with it. And I think this should show you and convince you that refactoring using Haskell is incredibly pleasant. I thought about doing a live demo. I'm going to put that in at the end, and instead I want to wrap up and first of all put out a lot of thank yous for people who helped me with the talk. Obviously, the wider Roland who wrote Shellcheck, the currently most starred project on GitHub, offered a lot of insights into what he thinks Haskell did to this project, as the same did like Joey Nielsen. He's the author of Postgres. He also gave a lot of insights, and unfortunately I can't put everything I learned from them into the talk. I hope to put it out there someday, but it's really good advice. Also, many thanks to Christian Despries, not only because he did this amazing refactoring, but also because he allowed me to use that example in the talk. And many thanks to my colleague Elizabeth Kant, who helped me with the data analysis. She's a data scientist, so that probably was a piece of cake for her. And of course, last but not least, a lot of thanks to John McFarlane, who wrote Pandoc, and to everybody involved with Pandoc and the whole community. Working with it is a great pleasure, simply because they are all there. If you like to support Pandoc, there's the easy way of just taking out your credit card and sponsor. There's the much more easy way of using GitHub and to write some code and to fix some bugs. That's always a really, really helpful thing. Nobody is actually getting paid for developing Pandoc, so any contribution is most welcome.
Where does the sponsoring money go?
Sorry.
I can
answer that later. So, yes, as a summary, if you think about using Haskell, by all means, please do. It's a great language, and you should really leverage it for what it offers. And even though it does have its weaknesses and side effects, which you'd not like, it's still possible to mitigate those. And if you're worried about not finding people, I hope I was able to convince you this is not the case, because people really, really like to program in Haskell. And of course, for all your programming needs, please do Pandoc. Do use Pandoc. So yeah, that's it for the talk, and I think I'll take some questions if that's okay, and then dive into the presentation, like live demo of Pandoc. If there are questions. Yes?
Is there feedback from the user base? So since you have one central intermediate format of the document around, right. I suppose there's in almost every document type that you support, there's some corner cases which you cannot cover because you cannot incorporate all the things from all the document types into your central data structure.
Yes, absolutely. So just to repeat for the video, the question was how do we deal with corner cases and with stuff that cannot be represented in the central document structure? Part of it is simply discarded because we just can't handle it. Part of it is encoded using convention, which is kind of unusual for a strong typing system, but if we encode everything into the type would be very complex. So a lot of elements, for example, allow to have arbitrary attributes, so we use those to encode a lot of information. And yeah, that's and some, as I said, is lost, because we mostly care about the structure of documents, and the structure is very well represented using the existing code base, but a lot of rendering details is just too much to handle, so that's discarded. Okay, there
are you say we should leverage Haskell for its strengths, and one feature that makes Haskell unique even amongst the functional statically typed programming languages is laziness.
Yes.
Do you have anything, like any opinions on that?
Yeah, I have many opinions on that, actually. It's, I love and hate laziness. It came up in conversation with the maintainers of this Haskell project that I mentioned. And pretty much everybody mentioned that at least at some point laziness kind of got in the way because there were memory leaks, which is really ugly. I don't think there's any language which reliably performs well, so I don't see that as really a bad thing, at least not with the expressiveness that Haskell has. But for the good stuff, I very much like laziness for just freeing me of having to think about certain details. It's dangerous because at some point you have to think about it if performance is degrading, but most of the time you can just go, well, sure, I don't mind if this is calculated now or later or never, I'm just going to use that value and see what happens, and usually it produces a very good and fast program. So yeah, that's my opinion on laziness. Okay, then if you have more questions later, we can still do that. I have to AMLOC is a command line program, so I'm going to use the command line. Is that big enough, or should I make it bigger? That's better. Cool. The first thing I'd like to show you is the talk, which is, of course, written using HandLock. And it's written in Markdown in this case. And it's just a Markdown file. Let me make that a bit smaller again. I'm sorry. Still a bit. And all the slides are just plain Markdown. So I have my speaker notes in there in special containers. And the rest is just plain normal Markdown as you'd expect. And the way I'm using this is I have a makefile, which often is a really good idea to use some kind of makefile, because it makes your life a lot simpler. PANDAC is quite powerful, it takes a lot of options, you don't want to have to remember all the options all the time you call it. So if you can combine them somewhere, either in a script or in this case in a makefile, it will make your life a lot easier. And you can see there's stuff like I was hoping for my mouse to appear on there, but it isn't. There's something with the filters, so I'm actually using a small Lua filter to modify my slides. And other than that, it's pretty straightforward. It's just, it calls PANDAC with a lot of options. It tells it to use Reveal.js as its output format, so the talk was the Reveal.js slides. I'm using a custom template, I'm using a special theme, I've added some CSS files, and in the end what comes out is the talk you just saw. This, of course, I mean, that might be interesting, but even more interesting is that you can do different formats. So if we want to make the talk as a PDF document, we can do so. We can create a Beamer slideshow, and let me show you, or not. This is surprising. What happened? Oh, yeah, if I add the file name, which probably works better. Okay, and yeah, here's the slideshow. Same source, still quite an acceptable slideshow. You can, it's less styled, obviously, because I didn't put any effort into styling it, but it still works. So this is cool. But how about other documents? And one of the primary use cases of Pandoc is that it's being used in academia, where people write articles with it. Like, for example, R Markdown, like R Studio, uses Pandoc to convert from the R Markdown format into whatever format you need. And for that, to help with that, we have a project called Pandoc Scholar, which I've written with Robert Winkler. And what it does, it takes Markdown, an article. You can specify all your metadata, which is very important with academic articles. You can do so using just JAML, put that in there. Write your article. This down here is a reference to your bibliography, which is also really important for academic writing. So it's all in here, and then you can run that. I always have a makefile for that. And it produces a couple of output formats here, and one of them is HTML. So we can take a look at the article in HTML. Render's okay. You can style it as you want. Something very interesting for people using it in academia is to be able to specify the affiliations and all that. We wrote a special Lua filter to make it easier to handle. And you can use something different. You could say, show me a docx, like Word file. Okay, that's taking a while. There it is, same source. If there's a journal which asks you, please give us the document in a Word format, Pandoc has got you covered. So that's nice. And yeah, how about, say, a PDF again? There we go. Nicely set LaTeX, typeset using LaTeX PDF just from the Markdown source. So, and basically it goes on and on. You can list the input and output formats using the command line. And yeah, it doesn't fit on the screen. There are many, many input formats. Let's see how many there are. 34 input formats, and 57 output formats. There's a lot you can do with Pandoc. Yeah, I think I'll leave it at that. Thanks.